called The Leash.
At Sawati. Bhikkhus, this samsara is without discoverable beginning. A first point is not discerned of beings roaming and wandering on, hindered by ignorance and fettered by craving. There comes a time, bhikkhus, when the great ocean dries up and evaporates and no longer exists. But still, I say, there is no making an end of suffering for those beings roaming and wandering on, hindered by ignorance and fettered by craving. There comes a time, bhikkhus, when Sineru, the king of mountains, burns up and perishes and no longer exists. But still, I say, there is no making an end of suffering for those beings roaming and wandering on, hindered by ignorance and fettered by craving. There comes a time, bhikkhus, when the great earth burns up and perishes and no longer exists. But still, I say, there is no making an end of suffering for those beings roaming and wandering on, hindered by ignorance and fettered by craving. Suppose, bhikkhus, a dog tied up on a leash was bound to a strong post or pillar. It would just keep on running and revolving around that same post or pillar. So too, the uninstructed worldling regards form as self, feeling as self, perception as self, volitional formations as self, consciousness as self. He just keeps running and revolving around form, around feeling, around perception, around volitional formations, around consciousness. As he keeps on running and revolving around them, he is not freed from form, not freed from feeling, not freed from perception, not freed from volitional formations, not freed from consciousness. He is not freed from birth, aging, and death, not freed from sorrow, lamentation, pain, displeasure, and despair, not freed from suffering, I say. But the instructed noble disciple does not regard form as self, nor feeling as self, nor perception as self, nor volitional formations as self, nor consciousness as self. He no longer keeps running and revolving around form, around feeling, around perception, around volitional formations, around consciousness. As he no longer keeps running and revolving around them, he is freed from form, freed from feeling, freed from perception, freed from volitional formations, freed from consciousness. He is freed from birth, aging, and death, freed from sorrow, lamentation, pain, displeasure, and despair. Freed from suffering, I say. Just a little footnote that expands on the simile of the dog. Bhikkhu Bodhi says here, the simile of the dog is also in Majjhima Nikaya. The commentaries say, the foolish worldling is like the dog, his you is like the leash, his personal identity, Sakkaya, is like the post. Like the dog's running around the post is the worldling's running around his personal identity, bound to it by craving and views. So just another sutta kind of describing the adinawa, the danger or the downside. Okay, and this sutta, this next one, is Yamaka, number 85. That's the one that I mentioned the other night in the talk. So, but this is in its full, in its completeness. On one occasion, the Venerable Sariputta was dwelling at Sawati in Jeta's Grove and not Appendicus Park. Now on that occasion, the following pernicious view had arisen in a bhikkhu named Yamaka. Quote, as I understand the Dhamma taught by the Blessed One, a bhikkhu whose taints are destroyed is annihilated and perishes with the breakup of the body and does not exist after death. A number of bhikkhus heard that such a pernicious view had arisen in the bhikkhu Yamaka. Then they approached the Venerable Yamaka and exchanged greetings with him. After which they sat down to one side and said to him, is it true, friend Yamaka, that such a pernicious view as this has arisen in you? As I understand the Dhamma taught by the Blessed One, a bhikkhu whose taints are destroyed is annihilated and perishes with the breakup of the body and does not exist after death. Exactly so, friends. As I understand the Dhamma taught by the Blessed One, a bhikkhu whose taints are destroyed is annihilated and perishes with the breakup of the body and does not exist after death. Friend Yamaka, do not speak thus. Do not misrepresent the Blessed One. It is not good to misrepresent the Blessed One. The Blessed One would not speak thus, a bhikkhu whose taints are destroyed is annihilated and perishes with the breakup of the body and does not exist after death. Yet, although he was admonished by the bhikkhus in this way, the Venerable Yamaka still obstinately grasped that pernicious view, adhered to it, and declared, as I understand the Dhamma taught by the Blessed One, a bhikkhu whose taints are destroyed is annihilated and perishes with the breakup of the body and does not exist after death. And Bhikkhu Bodhi points out that, in one of his footnotes, that Yamaka's particular view is not a complete and total annihilationist view, because a full-on annihilationist would say that the same was true for anybody, whether they were enlightened or not. So that it seems that he holds the view that there is some continuity or some self that continues life after life when you're unenlightened, but then when liberation, enlightenment comes, then that's when the annihilationist view comes into being. Since those bhikkhus were unable to detach the Venerable Yamaka from that pernicious view, they rose from their seats, approached the Venerable Sariputta, and told him all that had occurred, adding, "It would be good if the Venerable Sariputta would approach the bhikkhu Yamaka out of compassion for him." The Venerable Sariputta consented by silence. Then in the evening, the Venerable Sariputta emerged from seclusion. He approached the Venerable Yamaka and exchanged greetings with him, after which he sat down to one side and said to him, "Is it true, friend Yamaka, that such a pernicious view as this has arisen in you? As I understand the Dhamma taught by the Blessed One, a bhikkhu whose taints are destroyed is annihilated and perishes with the breakup of the body and does not exist after death." "Exactly so, friend." "What do you think, friend Yamaka? Is form permanent or impermanent?" "Impermanent, friend." "Is feeling permanent or impermanent?" "Impermanent, friend." "Is perception permanent or impermanent?" "Impermanent, friend." "Are volitional formations permanent or impermanent?" "Impermanent, friend." "Is consciousness permanent or impermanent?" "Impermanent, friend." And then goes through the same recitation that we hear from many suttas, including, say, the Anattalakkhana Sutta, which I won't go and read completely today because we'll get it at another point. "Therefore, seeing thus, he understands there is no more for this state of being." "What do you think, friend Yamaka? Do you regard form as the Tathagata?" "No, friend." "Do you regard feeling as the Tathagata?" "No, friend." "Do you regard perception as the Tathagata?" "No, friend." "Do you regard volitional formations as the Tathagata?" "No, friend." "Do you regard consciousness as the Tathagata?" "No, friend." "What do you think, friend Yamaka? Do you regard the Tathagata as in form?" "No, friend." "Do you regard the Tathagata as apart from form?" "No, friend." "Do you regard the Tathagata as in feeling, as apart from feeling, as in perception, as apart from perception, as in volitional formations, as apart from volitional formations, as in consciousness, as apart from consciousness?" "No, friend." "What do you think, friend Yamaka? Do you regard form, feeling, perception, volitional formations, and consciousness taken together as the Tathagata?" "No, friend." "What do you think, friend Yamaka? Do you regard the Tathagata as one who is without form, without feeling, without perception, without volitional formations, without consciousness?" "No, friend." "But, friend, when the Tathagata is not apprehended by you as real and actual here in this very life, is it fitting for you to declare, as I understand the Tathagata taught by the Blessed One, as I understand the Dhamma taught by the Blessed One, A bhikkhu whose taints are destroyed is annihilated and perishes with the breakup of the body and does not exist after death. Formerly, friend Sariputta, when I was ignorant, I did hold that pernicious view. But now that I have heard this Dhamma teaching of the Venerable Sariputta, I have abandoned that pernicious view and have made the breakthrough to the Dhamma. In other words, he became a stream enterer at this point. If, friend Yamaka, they were to ask you, friend Yamaka, when a bhikkhu is an arahant, one whose taints are destroyed, what happens to him with the breakup of the body after death? Being asked thus, what would you answer? So he's testing his knowledge here. If they were to ask me this, friend, I would answer thus. Friends, form is impermanent. What is impermanent is suffering. What is suffering has ceased and passed away. Feeling is impermanent. What is impermanent is suffering. What is suffering has ceased and passed away. Perception is impermanent. What is impermanent is suffering. What is suffering has ceased and passed away. Volitional formations are impermanent. What is impermanent is suffering. What is suffering has ceased and passed away. Consciousness is impermanent. What is impermanent is suffering. What is suffering has ceased and passed away. Being asked thus, friend, I would answer in such a way. Good, good, friend Yamaka. Now, friend Yamaka, I will make up a simile for you in order to convey this same meaning even more clearly. Suppose, friend Yamaka, there was a householder or a householder's son, a rich man with much wealth and property, protected by a bodyguard. Then some man would appear who wanted to ruin him, to harm him, to endanger him, to take his life. It would occur to that man, this householder or householder's son is a rich man with much wealth and property, protected by a bodyguard. It won't be easy to take his life by force. Let me get close to him and then take his life. Then he would approach that householder or householder's son and say to him, I would serve you, sir. Then the householder or householder's son would appoint him as a servant. The man would serve him, rising up before him, retiring after him, doing whatever he wants, agreeable in his conduct, endearing in his speech. The householder or householder's son would consider him a friend, a bosom friend, and he would place trust in him. But when the man becomes aware that the householder or householder's son has placed trust in him, then, finding him alone, he would take his life with a sharp knife. What do you think, friend Yamaka, when that man had approached that householder or householder's son and said to him, I would serve you, sir. Wasn't he a murderer even then, though the other did not recognize him as my murderer? And when the man was serving him, rising up before him, retiring after him, doing whatever he wants, agreeable in his conduct, endearing in his speech. Wasn't he a murderer then, too, though the other did not recognize him as my murderer? And when the man came upon him while he was alone and took his life with a sharp knife, wasn't he a murderer then, too, though the other did not recognize him as my murderer? Yes, friend. So that's that simile that's pretty stark, relating the five khandhas that are affected by clinging as a stealthy murderer that we place trust in over and over and over again, and then it turns on us, disappoints us. So too, friend Yamaka, the uninstructed worldling, who is not a seer of the noble ones, and is unskilled and undisciplined in their Dhamma, who is not a seer of superior persons, and is unskilled and disciplined in their Dhamma, regards form as self, or self as possessing form, or form as in self, or self as in form. He regards feeling as self, perception as self, volitional formations as self, consciousness as self. And then through that same sequence, or as self as possessing consciousness, or consciousness as in self, or self as in consciousness. He does not understand as it really is, impermanent form as impermanent form, impermanent feeling as impermanent feeling, impermanent perception as impermanent perception, impermanent volitional formations as impermanent volitional formations, impermanent consciousness as impermanent consciousness. He does not understand as it really is, painful form as painful form, painful feeling as painful feeling, painful perception as painful perception, painful volitional formations as painful volitional formations, painful consciousness as painful consciousness. He does not understand as it really is, selfless form as selfless form, selfless feeling as selfless feeling, selfless perception as selfless perception, selfless volitional formations as selfless volitional formations, selfless consciousness as selfless consciousness. He does not understand as it really is, conditioned form as conditioned form, conditioned feeling as conditioned feeling, conditioned perception as conditioned perception, conditioned volitional formations as conditioned volitional formations, conditioned consciousness as conditioned consciousness. He does not understand as it really is, murderous form as murderous form, murderous feeling as murderous feeling, murderous perception as murderous perception, murderous volitional formations as murderous volitional formations, murderous consciousness as murderous consciousness. He becomes engaged with form, clings to it, and takes a stand upon it as myself. He becomes engaged with feeling, with perception, with volitional formations, with consciousness, clings to it, and takes a stand upon it as myself. These same five aggregates of clinging to which he becomes engaged and to which he clings lead to his harm and suffering for a long time. But friend, the instructed noble disciple, who is a seer of the noble ones, does not regard form as self, or self as possessing form, or form as in self, or self as in form. He does not regard feeling as self, perception as self, volitional formations as self, consciousness as self, or self as possessing consciousness, or consciousness as in self, or self as in consciousness. He understands as it really is, permanent form as in, he understands as it really is, impermanent form as impermanent form, through impermanent consciousness as impermanent consciousness. He understands as it really is, painful form as painful form, and up through painful consciousness. He understands as it really is, selfless form as selfless form. He understands as it really is, conditioned form as conditioned form. He understands as it really is, murderous form as murderous form, up through murderous consciousness as murderous consciousness. He does not become engaged with form, cling to it, and take a stand upon it as myself. He does not become engaged with feeling, with perception, with volitional formations, with consciousness, cling to it, and take a stand upon it as myself. These same five aggregates of clinging, to which he does not become engaged, and to which he does not cling, lead to his welfare and happiness for a long time. So it is, friend Sariputta, for those venerable ones who have such compassionate and benevolent brothers in the holy life, to admonish and instruct them. And now that I have heard this Dhamma teaching of the Venerable Sariputta, my mind is liberated from the taints by non-clinging. So, full liberation. This is what the Venerable Sariputta said. Elated, the Venerable Yamaka delighted in the Venerable Sariputta's statement. So, Sariputta hit him hard, over and over and over again, and pummeled him into enlightenment. But one of the things that was interesting to me, particularly with that whole sequence, was just how, even after the point of stream entry, the reflections that lead one into full liberation or full enlightenment are the same reflections. It's just doing it over and over and over again until it really washes through and gets rid of all of the final fetters.
Thoughts?
If
find out the analogy is not totally landing for me, not the condos as a murderer. Is it for the same reasons like you described last night, like the drawbacks of the condos? Old age, sickness and death, not satisfying? Or is it more like we place our trust in it, like you said, we bound the pot, and then it turns on us? The reasons I just mentioned, is that essentially what it comes down?
That's my interpretation of it, is that it's the traitorous nature of the five khandhas that he's referring to. It's sort of like over and over and over again we get kind of sucked into the belief that some investment in the khandhas or something within in the realm of the khandhas is going to bring us some sort of everlasting satisfaction, and so we keep on trusting that that will happen and hoping that that will happen over and over and over again, and only to find that that kind of refuge can't be found in any of the khandhas because of the very nature of being impermanent and changing. There's no consistent trust that you can place in them. So they have that traitorous nature to them, in a sense they'll turn on you.
I find the traitorous nature that I understand. So if the analogy were like you hire a butler into your home and he turns out to be a thief, would that be exactly the same, or is there something implicit in the murder idea? I guess I'm sort of stuck on that.
Yeah.
I'm with you on the traitors.
Yeah. I hadn't thought about it in those terms, so I don't. Maybe the commentary has some sort of, probably they have some sort of looking out. Paul, do you have any sense of that?
In the sense of
what's being murdered?
Place of trust in it. And whatever you've invested in terms of sense of self is in the same way that your life is taken from you. So is any investment in form, feeling, perception, mental formations, conscious, any identity, attachment, hope, that's completely taken away from you. So that basically one's life. What has assumed was what has assumed is one's life is then taken away from it.
Perhaps it's murder as opposed to thief simply because that's the most extreme.
It's the most extreme, yes. I think that's the reason for it. He's pummeling. So with the most kind of vivid imagery.
Yeah, it makes sense. And that he uses the most extreme kind of example because that's what it takes, to get us to pay attention.
It isn't as if they're not so nice to you.
Yeah, or if you trust in them, you're going to have a bad day. The commentary here, of course, has its sort of... I'm not particularly satisfied with it, but I'll read it out. The uninstructed worldling attached to the round is like the gullible householder, the five fragile aggregates like the murderous enemy. When the enemy comes up to the householder and offers to serve him, that is like the time the aggregates are acquired at the moment of rebirth. When the householder takes the enemy to be his friend, that is like the time the worldling grasps the aggregates, thinking, they are mine. The honor the householder bestows on the enemy, thinking, he is my friend, is like the honor the worldling bestows on the aggregates by bathing them, feeding them, etc. The murder of the householder by the enemy is like the destruction of the worldling's life when the aggregates break up.
I do like the, you're actually take the murderer in, and you take the kindness in. And
right.
You bathe them, you
feed them,
look after them, find clothes for them. It's kind of, it's a reason I say that.
That's true. Well, the worldling who has an annihilationist view.
Yeah.
But if you hold an eternalist view, then...
just that view that you don't have to help. That's just the view that you don't have to help.
Right. At least for the enlightened. The enlightened being. Anyway.
The worldling dies and the enlightened being doesn't get killed by it.
I like the reflection on step by step talking about, well, isn't he still a murderer? And
yeah.
It's just like the Pandas in the same way. It's like you buy into them and you just, they're just no, it's fine.
Right.
It's fine. Your whole life.
Whether you recognize him as a murderer or not, recognize it as a murderer or not, it's still a murderer.
Still, and you just get by into it.
Yeah.
Still, and then the shot.
Yeah. Yeah. And you keep on thinking, okay, now everything will be okay, you know.
I like to think of it too, it's like we invest a sense of self in our perceptions and mental formations and whatever, the whole thing. And something changes and doesn't go our way, and we can almost feel like we're dying.
Mm-hmm.
We're still alive and fine.
Mm-hmm.
We can actually feel like we're dying.
Yeah, and when it's taken away, it's dukkha.
I think to that person, it's a better form of like mapping over a whole lifetime, but more like a momentary thing of like trying to find some satisfaction in 5 minutes, and then it's not quite. I want it to go where I don't get it quite what I like. It's like that's the life in the path.
Yeah. Sort of the whole moment to moment. Rendition of dependent origination versus the over 3 lifetime kind of a thing. And I think both seem to work, but the one that's most practical and most useful for contemplation here and now is what's happening in this moment. I agree.
So just as an aside, that Ajahn Chah on many occasions used that part of that sutta.
The analogy of the murderer, or a different
not
part?
Not the analogy, no. Just before that, we're talking about the, he's become a stream of dreams. Okay, if you go off somewhere and they ask you about the teachings, how do you reply? What happens to the Tathagata?
Mm-hmm.
Or what happens to an enlightened being? And
then they pass away.
So that I can still, it rings in my ear, in my mind, Ajahn Chah.
It's a way of kind of not, you can't answer the question directly the way it's asked, so you have to rephrase it.
All there is the arising and ceasing of the kindness.
Right.
I like the way that's kind of unusual too, the way Yamaka puts it after he's a Sota Pana. It's like, form arises, that which arises is suffering, that which is suffering is ceased. So it's like, driving home the point of like the end of suffering.
Yeah.